Thanks, man.
Hello, hello. Is this the right mic picking up? We're in. That was such a cool thing to hear TJ say, because if he was speaking and I was introducing him, I would have said like the exact same thing, including that talk we just had a few weeks ago. So I think we kind of feed off each other. It's not me. But let me tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Aaron, for those of you who don't know me. I'm Adam's brother, in case you missed that. We're pretty different, but if you notice, we kind of sound the same. So it's kind of like you're listening to the same person, just like a different personality. But it's a real privilege to be here, because I helped out with this one last year, and I was kind of limited in my involvement. We had some really powerful speakers, and I was really blown away receiving Illuminate last year. And so this year's theme really hits home for me. Hits home for me big, because I grew up in the church. I grew up a Christian. That was my life. And as I got older, I just had this natural thing. I wanted to ask questions. I wanted to question everything, whether it was good to question it or bad to question it. I questioned everything. You know, even when I was a little kid, why would I make my bed if I'm just going to sleep in it again tonight? And my mom's just like, you know, well, it looks nice. Who's going to be in my room? Well, just do it. Shut up. And so since I was a little kid, I've just had this like, why do I want to find the value of X, algebra teacher? What's that going to get me? Well, just do it. You know, do with a system. I'm like, well, what's the value of X? What does that mean to me? And I just questioned everything. And it's caused me a great deal of knowledge to be opened up through question. It's also caused me a great deal of a rebellious spirit to plant seeds in my life. So nothing is ever, you know, the surface value of what I receive, I never take it. You know, I always want to see, you know, well, what's behind what you're telling me? Explain this to me. And so these questions, you know, caused me to question my own life. You know, well, why would I want to be a Christian if Christians act like that? Why would I want to live a less interesting life than the one I'm already living if you're selling me your lifestyle? Which essentially, I mean, there's more to it than that, but at the time, that's what I perceived it as, the Christian lifestyle. It was not attractive to me. Why would I want that? Why would I want to sit in my little bubble of ignorance and just start ridiculing those around me? And I had this horrible vision of what a Christian was, and it was just twisted through the lies of the devil and through very bad examples of Christianity. And so I went with this bitterness towards Christianity, and I got into drugs and got into a lot of trouble, and wound up back in Hanford. And my mom says, you always clicked with Pastor Jeff. Why don't you meet with him and maybe meet for coffee, and maybe, you know, he can give you some insight and give you some direction and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I like Jeff. He doesn't annoy me. All right. I meet for coffee with Jeff like twice. Next thing I know, I'm starting an internship at the church, assisting him in outreach, local and global outreach. A couple months later, I'm on a plane to Cambodia. My first, well, I guess not my first mission trip, but really my first independent mission trip. And I'm just like, I was getting stoned less than 6 months ago. Like, what am I doing? Like, this is insane. Are you sure you guys want me on board? And he just like fed me this confidence. It's just like, you don't need to be perfect. You don't need to have all the answers. Just be obedient. And I was just kind of like, man, this is so exciting. And I just started taking those questions and that rebellious spirit towards what I was being exposed to. Why are kids starving when we're eating the most food of any country in the world? We have so much money. I was working part-time jobs, paid internship at the church, making nothing. Fortunately, I'm living with my parents, so I've got money to blow. And I'm sitting here spending money on, you know, fast food all the time, and I'm thinking to myself, man, I'm able to do a lot with making next to nothing. I'm living like below the poverty line as far as USA is concerned, and I'm living like a king. And so it was just really bizarre. I started just questioning, you know, just why do people not have access to clean water? That's inexcusable. It is inexcusable. Why do people get elephantitis in their feet in Africa because all they need is shoes? Are you kidding me? How many pairs of shoes will I find in my closet? And this questioning, God gave me that, and I was finally realizing why. It's not to rebel and go against the system, which was so fun. It was to question injustice. It was to see something that needs to be fixed, needs to be changed. And some of my early trips, I was able to go to Cambodia, to India, to Mexico several times, Brazil a couple times. Even on my own, I was able to do a solo mission trip to Costa Rica, and then a very fun trip to South Africa for the World Cup. And so God's really blessed me with exposure to the world. And through it, I've learned so much. I'm constantly learning about what's going on in the world, what people are like, how people think, the way people think of Americans, the way people think of American Christians or Christianity in general. And I'm learning that, like Adam mentioned, in our master school bubble, we were kind of like, we didn't know that was happening. I didn't know people hate Christians. Like, I just didn't even know that made sense. They're such nice people, right? Then I started hating them, but we're past that. God's humbled me, thankfully. So the question that's just soaking into my soul, that's just been there since day one with Jeff, I mean, his passion for the lost, his passion for injustice being resolved, why are we allowing injustice to exist? We know it's there. We don't need a dramatic infomercial with a Sarah McLachlan song to play to know that kids are starving, right? Globalization, internet, we've had access to it. We know people are starving. We know people are hurting, not just physically, spiritually. They're asking, why am I on this planet, this stupid, broken planet, living in abuse and drug addiction? Why am I even here? And we're not answering those questions. We are to some extent, but I feel like we need to challenge ourselves and just continually ask ourselves, why am I allowing injustice to exist? And that question kind of caused me to dip into the Old Testament, which I don't do too often. I'm a New Testament kind of guy, and when they asked me to talk about the world, I thought, that's just fine. I'm gonna dig up some of Paul's letters, talk about mission trips. I'm excited. And then I started thinking about some of these Old Testament stories, and in particular, the story of Jonah. I mean, he's probably one of the first missionaries, really. We all know the story of Jonah, or at least the watered-down kids version. We see him smiling from the belly of a fish with a nice fire going, and he's just like, you know? And it wasn't exactly like that, but... So if any of you have your Bibles, I hope most of you do, because we're going to be spending a lot of time in the book of Jonah. In my Bible, it's page 819. That means nothing to you, but it's worth a try. It's between Obadiah and Micah, Old Testament. So you guys can take like 5 seconds to find that. Okay. So Jonah 1 just starts off. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai. Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it because its wickedness has come up before me. To the point. I love our God. And so, the very next sentence. But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed to Tarshish. That didn't take long. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. This is gold to me because several times in the Bible, we have people running from God. I don't know if any of you have like pet dogs, where you get your meal made, you get your lunch all set, and you realize you don't have a drink, so you set it there. And you're walking to go get your drink, and you're looking back as your dog walks to your food. And you're just like, dude, I'm looking at you. Get away. Like, you really have the audacity to try to go get my food right now? Or you're barbecuing outside, and the dog's starting to sniff up on the plate, and like, you don't think I'm gonna come smack you right now. You are not eating my food. And I feel like just, if it's me, if I was God, thank God I'm not God, I'd just be like, are you running from me? I'm God. Like, you have to be kidding. I think of Adam and Eve. You're hiding? That's a joke. Like, I'm God. What are you going to hide from me? You're a joke right now. And so, thankfully, I'm not God. Again, God is so clever. And I love how he does this whole solution here. The Lord sent a great wind, giant storm arose, threatened to break up the ship. All the sailors were afraid and each cried out to his own God. They threw cargo into the sea. They're dumping their cargo. I mean, they're so terrified. They're at the brink of just like giving up. They're so scared for their lives. And it goes on and on. Jonah was down below in a deep sleep, Who knows how he was able to sleep with his conscience. But he's sleeping while the place is falling apart. Captain goes to him, "How can you sleep? Get up. Call on your God. May he take notice of us that we will not perish." This guy's hopeless. He's reaching for any options. He's so scared. And so in the midst of this calamity, that's the word I was looking for, the sailors said to each other, "Come, let us cast lots to find out who is responsible for this calamity." And you have to get the sense that Jonah at this moment is like, "Oh crap, I'm not gonna get away with this, am I?" He knows. And let's see here. They cast lots, big shocker. The lot falls to Jonah. It's like the short straw in their society. Like, all right guys, who's to blame? Boom, Jonah gets the short straw. I mean, big shocker, right? So they asked him, "Who is responsible for making all this trouble for us? What did you do? Where do you come from? What is your country?" They're starting to think like, dude, what kind of chaos are you bringing on us? Like, what have you done to deserve all this? "I'm a Hebrew. I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the land." Yeah, I'd be terrified too. He's making the sea go crazy right now. So this says the guys were terrified. "What have you done?" They knew he was running from the Lord because he had just told them. The sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, "What should we do to you to make the sea calm down for us?" I mean, they're desperate. And he says, "Pick me up and throw me into the sea, and it will become calm. I know that this is my fault. This great storm has come upon you." And again, I'm just amazed at, I have to confess, I think Jonah's one of the biggest idiots in the Bible. And I say that, you know, with humility towards my own stupidity, but I mean, this guy goes above and beyond. Rather than just tell God, like, "All right, you're right, let's go to Nineveh, let's do this thing. I'm on board, I see your point, let's do it." No, throw me over, I'm a lost cause, just kill me. And if I'm God, thank God I'm not God, I'm like, "Snuff, you're a waste of my time. Let's find one of these sailors who actually acknowledges my power." Like, are you kidding me? And so Jonah just continues to just disappoint me. He's a fool. He goes through such effort to just avoid his responsibility. So here in 13, and this is such a powerful verse, chunk of verses, I should say, through 16. "Instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder. They cried out to the Lord." I'm skipping through, sorry. So if it doesn't seem word for word, I'm not jipping the Bible. "They cried to the Lord, 'Lord, please do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man, for you, O Lord, have done as you pleased.'" These are not godly people, right? "Then they took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him." That's a very important verse. We'll come back to that in a minute. But Jonah did the exact opposite of what he was told. And God, through his creative way of twisting it all around to get him back on track, I mean, this entire ship's crew was saved. And so it just goes to show that wherever God's, I mean, wherever he's taking us, even if we completely miss it, I mean, we're going to see him move. It's inevitable. You go walk outside your door and just bring up a conversation about God and you're irritated with him or something, he's gonna meet you in those moments. God's here, he's everywhere, things are happening, he's moving. And in this instance, here Jonah's giving up on life. "Just kill me. I blew it. There's no hope for me. Woe is me." All these guys get saved. They give their lives to the Lord's, to the Lord. There's only one. So Jonah's given up. He's going to die. "But the Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was inside the fish for 3 days and three nights." That's no joke. At that point, I think I would actually be like, okay, just kill me. This sucks. So here we go in chapter 2. I wrote in my notes, only redeeming quality for Jonah is this prayer. "In my distress, I called to the Lord and he answered me. From the depths of the grave, I called for him." He goes on and on. "You hurled me into the deep, into the very hearts of the seas." Water was, one translation says that water was at my throat. The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever. I mean, he's hopeless. "But you brought my life up from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. And this is, in my opinion, just the greatest moment for Jonah as an individual in his relationship with God. Those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. So immediately you have a sympathetic response to where before he doesn't care about the Ninevites. It says later, he didn't even want to go because he knew God was going to rescue them. It was almost racism. He had so much pride towards these people, he didn't even want to see them saved. And now all of a sudden he's softened for a brief moment. Those who cling to the worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. There's almost a hope in it, like they could have this grace. Let's get it to them. And then he says, but I with a song of thanksgiving will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord. And in this theme of restoration, that verse, I've started like three times in every Bible I have. But with a song of thanksgiving, I will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord. What does it mean to be a Christian? Usually when you say, you know, someone became a Christian, you say they committed their life to the Lord. Oh, so-and-so, Billy just committed his life to the Lord. There's that great feeling of joy. But commitment. We have a responsibility. In the book, The Next Christian, which we're kind of running alongside a lot of that message, it says we're not saved just from something. We are saved for something. We're not saved so that we can kick back and sing kumbaya until we die. We're here to do something. Otherwise, I mean, if there's a song, it's actually a secular song, but it's a powerful statement. If heaven was all that was promised to us, why wouldn't I pray for death? And if you think about that, if heaven was all that was promised to us, why wouldn't we just pray for death? That's because heaven's not all that's promised to us. And in this theme of restoration, that vow that we made, does anyone have any water? I'm gonna run and get some. How far does this mic go? Oh, he's got it. In this theme of restoration, it's good to remind ourselves that Christianity is a commitment. We didn't say, God, take my sin from me so that I can just relax. No, take my sin because you died for me so that I can experience the fullness of the kingdom of God, so that I can experience it when I die, but I can experience it right now. And I can share it with people who are going through hell, people who are miserable, people who are suffering and dying, unnecessarily dying because we're not doing anything. And so this statement, I just think is profound, even though, again, like I said, Jonah remains a pretty big idiot through the whole book. But he has this moment where he kind of gets it. What I have vowed, I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord. It's awkward. Okay, so we have the epic prayer and the fish. That's awesome. Only redeeming moment for Jonah. The very next thing God does, I mean, he doesn't waste any time. I love a God of action. I love our God. Chapter 3. Verse 1, then the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time. Go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim it to it the message I give you. Full circle. Nothing changed. All he needs is this thing right here. Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord and went to Nineveh. Obedience. I think I could just sum up this whole message and just say, be obedient. Done. Close. Turn the mic off. Call it a day. I'm not gonna because they need me to fill a bunch of time, but the bottom line is, all he needs is obedience. And Jonah approached it with such pride and such judgment. He knew what was right. He knew what people needed. And for myself, two times I was able to do a mission trip to Brazil. And Brazil's a pretty interesting place. There's a lot of openness to the spiritual realm. It's, you know, in India is the same way. Whether it's witchcraft or our God, there's the openness. They know it's there. They know that the spiritual realm exists. They've just been led astray. And so what we dealt with is just large amounts of witchcraft, large amount of just demonic possession. And I mean, if you haven't seen that, I don't know if you ever saw those, you know, those cheesy exorcist movies that are really dumb and just have this really like twisted view of spirituality. But there's some of them where you see these people writhing and saying these horrible things. And it's like, I've witnessed that. I've seen that firsthand. And it is freaking scary. And in Brazil, anyways, we experienced this. We witnessed a girl who was born deaf in her 30s. Pastor Jim snaps a finger, is the first thing she'd ever heard, and she just weeps. I mean, you think God's not moving today? You think God doesn't exist today? And so we saw this abundance of the Holy Spirit being poured out, people being healed, cripples walking, witchcraft, people who were doing witchcraft for their entire lives coming. The next day they came to church and someone had to point her out and say, that's the girl we prayed over that was delivered from witchcraft. I couldn't recognize her. Her entire face changed. It's mind-blowing to think what God is capable of if it's paired with our obedience. And so I came back from these trips just blown away. I could not even comprehend how mighty our God was. And all this time I've been getting this cream and sugar version of him here in USA, and I came back with this bitterness. And here Nineveh was a far off place for Jonah, but for me, Nineveh was USA. I came back from third world country after third world country wishing I didn't have to get back on that plane and come back here. I was just like, just so we can spoon feed and force feed the word to people here in USA, just so people can just, whenever they're just slightly inconvenienced or a pastor says something they don't like, they'll bail out and go to a new church. And I had this bitterness, like I was a judge. I made myself a judge over Christians in the USA saying, gosh, you guys have it so easy. You don't know what it's like in Cambodia when they don't have music or microphones and these kids are just screaming praise and worship to God with their voices. That's all they can afford. And I was just really moved by this, but it caused me to get so proud. I was so bitter. And so when I'm reading this, I'm going on and on, like telling God, Jonah was an idiot. Why did you even waste time on this guy? He doesn't even get it at the end. It doesn't even show that he like, okay, I humble me, God, I finally understand. He never understood. I wonder if he ever clicked. Like, oh, I get it, it's not about me. So I'm going on and on in my prayer, just like, God, I'm so frustrated. Like, Jonah's such a bonehead. And then I realized, oh crap, I was totally doing the same thing. And so I'm like bashing Jonah, and I realized I came back with this bitterness towards my own country of just like, we're spoiled here, which granted, there's a lot of truth to that. But who am I to say? Who am I to say that if I would just listen to what God's saying, we wouldn't see the exact same kind of revival here in Hanford, California, wherever. And so it really humbled me, and I just started really embracing that idea of obedience. And so then we have here in chapter 3, he's gone to Nineveh. And here we have an example of how much Jonah needed to contribute to this mission trip. Jonah obeyed the word of, this is verse 3 of chapter 3, if you're following along. Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord and went to Nineveh. Now Nineveh was a very important city. A visit required 3 days. I don't know if that means because of time or because of scheduling or whatever. But on the first day, Jonah started into the city. He proclaimed, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overturned. How about that for a real soft-hearted, loving message to tell a country? You're visiting this place. And, city, I mean. I'm sorry, I keep saying country. City, great city of Nineveh. And so 40 days and Nineveh will be overturned. If I heard that, I'd just be like, get lost, buddy. Who are you to talk to me like that? Because that's our flesh. But this wasn't Jonah's flesh. Jonah's flesh is good for nothing. The very next sentence, verse 5, the Ninevites believed God. It's like Jonah should take some notes. They declared a fast, and all of them, from the greatest to the least, put on sackcloth. And it's like, I don't even remember the story about Jonah. All I remember is the fish. How powerful is this, that stupid Jonah shows up, finally obeys God, and in one sentence, the Ninevites believed God. That was easy. They all declared a fast. I mean, they are weeping. They're fearing for their souls. They want redemption. They want to be restored. When the news reached the king of Nineveh, he rose from his throne. This is the king. Took off his royal robes, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat down in the dust. Sackcloth is this really rugged clothing you'd wear when you're fasting to just show humility. I mean, this is the king. He's completely humbling himself and just dropping. Sat down in the dust. Then he issued a proclamation to the city. By the decree of the king and his nobles, do not let any man, beast, herd, or flock taste anything. He goes on and on. I mean, this is a hardcore fast. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent and with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish. He doesn't even know for sure. This man is so desperate for redemption. Who knows? God may yet relent. He's expecting himself to be lost. And in that same way, how deserving are we of death? We've contributed, Pastor Brad Bell at The Well in Fresno says, the only thing we can contribute to salvation is sin. All we create is the need for salvation. And obviously there's, you know, obedience that goes into that, which he explains, but I like that saying. The only thing we can contribute to salvation is sin. Jonah, all he contributed was his sin and his pride, and then finally he obeys, and the results are astounding. An entire city gives up their lives for the Lord. And here in verse 10 of chapter 3, when God saw what they did and how they had turned from their evil ways, he had compassion and did not bring upon them the destruction he had threatened, the destruction that they deserved. When God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he had compassion. And this is when you just get really mad at Jonah. But Jonah, and I have it in my notes as Jonah's tantrum. I picture like a little teenager just throwing a fit. Jonah was greatly displeased and became angry. He prayed to the Lord, "Oh Lord, is this not what I said when I was still at home? That is why I was so quick to flee to Tarshish. I knew that you would be gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, a God who relents from sending calamity." He knew he would redeem the Ninevites. He didn't think the Ninevites deserved it. Such pride that I can relate to. But the Lord replied, "Have you any right to be angry?" And that response again, thank God I'm not God. I'd just be all, "You're dead. Shut up. Have you any right to be angry?" He's so patient. Jonah went out and sat down. I could just picture him. There he made a shelter, sat in its shade, and waited to see what would happen to the city. So God sends him this vine, and there's this whole story about he sends the vine, and Jonah's finally getting over it, and then he kills the vine. And me and Jeff were talking about this, like, you know, God, I believe God has a sense of humor. I believe he created us in his image, and look how profound our humor is. And I just think he's kind of like, you think you're that important? Snap, there goes your vine, buddy. Here comes some scorching heat. And he's just kind of like, get over it, you little kid. Like, who do you think you are? You just saw an entire city get redeemed. And so Jonah's just throwing a fit. And what's he say? He wanted to die. It's better for me to die than to live. Oh gosh. God said to Jonah, do you have any right to be angry about this vine? I do. I'm angry enough to die. It's like, give me a break, you idiot. And so here he goes on and on. You've been concerned about this vine, though you did not tend it. You didn't make it grow. You contributed nothing to it, he's saying. It sprang up overnight and died overnight. What difference does it make to you in your minuscule little life here on earth? But Nineveh has more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left. These people are suffering. Cattle as well. Grand city, should I not be concerned about that great city? And I have that verse underlined dozens of times. I can barely read it. Did not want to miss that chunk. Should I not be concerned about that great city? God's compassion is astounding. It amazes me that he just never stops seeking out the lost and seeking out the sinful, the people who are directly opposing him. He's fighting to get them back. And all he asks for is our obedience. And so I have here Jonah's pride and this and that. And I really wanted to go back to that verse when I mentioned chapter 1, verse 16. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered their sacrifice and made vows to him. Not all of us have been obedient. And that's pretty obvious, I'd hope, for most people. Not all of us have heard his word and just said, yep, let's do it right now. Let's go and have that awkward conversation with that coworker. Let's go buy a plane ticket when I can't even pay my car payment and commit to go spread the word of God around the world. A lot of us haven't done that, myself included. And I feel like God's, through this message, is saying, it's not too late. Yes, you ran from me, Jonah, but look what happened. Your entire ship was saved. More people are experiencing the kingdom. We're going to see these guys in eternity. Because of my compassion and because of my grace that goes above and beyond your comprehension of anything. And so I just think that's a great reminder that even though Jonah was directly disobedient of God, that God still used that. And even though you and I might be living very comfortable lives and really in our routine, our greatest concern might be, gosh, I don't want to get up early for work tomorrow, rather than like, thank God I have a job. And so sometimes we can get out of whack on that. And I think it's important that God's going to remind us, hey, I'm still working through you. I'm still making this happen. Yes, I want you to go to Nineveh. But in the meantime, we're going to do some good stuff. And while we're on that process, while we're walking down that road to Nineveh, people will be saved. You're going to experience my compassion. You're going to experience my grace. You're going to experience my kingdom. I mean, whether you like it or not, God's real. God's reality doesn't depend on our belief. And so Jeff mentioned, where is your hill country? And I kind of laughed about that, you know, because I was gonna make the question of, where's Nineveh? And maybe you thought about that last night. Maybe you were like me and started getting messed up about different things and really felt convicted about a few things. Where is that place? Who is that person? What is that thing that God's been telling you? Hey, go preach the word. Go do this. Go heal this person. Go restore something. I mean, if you don't know what it is, the first thing you need to do is figure out what he's telling you. The second question is, and this is my biggest question, what's stopping you? What the heck is so big in our lives that's stopping us from just being obedient to what we're being told? Now, if you don't know what that is, that's fine. That's great. Embrace your relationship with God. Spend time with him. You will find out what that is, I promise you, whether it's going to be what you want to hear or not. It could be Nineveh. It could be something that you don't even like these people. I don't even want to see them saved, God. Why couldn't you send me to Belize and minister to people on the beach? That'd be cool. You know, it's not up to us. And so that question is just ringing in my head. Why are we allowing injustice? What's stopping us? And does anyone have like pieces of paper? Does anyone have like paper you can tear out or something? Let's rip it out of the notebook thing. If there's a lot of extra pages. Rip out a paper or leave it there. And I want everyone to take 2 minutes. I mean, not even that long. Just really, really fast. We're not stopping yet. What the heck is stopping you from going to Nineveh? That's all we're asking. Well, I should say, what is Nineveh? What is that hill country? Let's focus on that first. What's God been telling you? What's God been saying about that coworker? Hey, I really want you to go talk to them. Hey, I really want you to... It could be something as simple as sell your Xbox because all your quality hours are spent on Skyrim. Guilty. And so maybe it's something simple. Maybe it's something huge. Hey, I want you to sell your car, TJ, and do something radical and move your family to China. Chris Goldsmith, I want you to move your family to Mexico in the most dangerous season of that country. Your three little kids, all little gringos, move down to Mexico and go preach the word of God. No, that's not wise. That's not smart. You don't do that. But he knew. He knew what it was. Jonah knew where Nineveh was. He knew what Nineveh was. And for me, I think I'm starting to figure out what Nineveh is. And then that big question, what's stopping me? And so if you could just write that down, it could be something that's just hindering you. It could be the main thing. What is stopping you? What's holding you back? What is stopping you from experiencing that new level of ministry, that new level of relationship with God? When you talk to someone, you don't freeze up and think, oh, they're going to think I'm an idiot. You are an idiot. That's the best part. They're going to hear God instead of you. And so I just want to encourage you, figure out what that is. I mean, you can't get rid of something you don't know exists. And so before you can go to Nineveh, find out what's stopping you. And I just want to close with the one thing I've kind of reiterated, you know, with why are we allowing injustice? God's big enough. Look back at Jonah's story here when he spoke one sentence and saw 120,000 people give their life to the Lord. One sentence. Can you imagine that? God's big enough. I think we've got that figured out. And I think all we need to really remember is all God needs is our obedience. All he needs is us to willfully say, I will. I will go to Nineveh. I will go give someone some freaking purified water. It's not that hard. I will fundraise for a little bit and make myself a little uncomfortable because I want to see the world restored. I want to see the explosion of the church the way it did in the early days of the church, those early 300 years that Jeff was talking about. And I just want to challenge you to be obedient. If you don't know what God's asking you to do, ask him. If you don't know what's stopping you, ask him. He knows. He's watching you like screw around, like that feeling you get when your dog's like walking to your meal, like, hey, I'm watching you. Don't do that. I'm right here. Let's go this way. Let's go do this. It's gonna be exciting, it's gonna be fun, and you're gonna learn a lot. And all he wants us to do is say, okay, let's do it. And so in that same feeling that me and TJ had for so long, of just all those conversations we've had, of every time we get done talking, we're like, let's do it. Let's go. Let's go buy tickets to China and just go start meeting people and just start finding out what people need and start restoring those lives. Let's go to work on Monday. I don't work on Mondays, but you guys probably do. Let's go to work on Tuesday and be like, this coworker is always pissed off. And yeah, I could say, I don't want to be around this person. They're bringing me down. I'm just going to stick clear. I know at the salon, I get Game of Thrones up, and I start reading these books. I'm like, just don't talk to me. I'm just really into Game of Thrones right now and the Stark family. And I close people out. So challenge you. Who are those people? Who are the Ninevites? Where's Nineveh? Go find them. Let's go get them back. The lost sheep. And so I want to just end with a quick little prayer. I know Chad said he's going to have a closing prayer, but I just want to drill that home. Jesus, we love you. It's an honor to serve alongside you. It's an honor to exist. It's an honor to meet together with friends that believe in you, to not be alone, to not be stranded carrying the load of this ministry. We are in this together. You have made the church so that we would work together, so that we would lift each other up in our times of need, and we would go out together and find the lost sheep, find the lost coin, find those prodigal sons that you are just aching to get back. Your heart is breaking for them, the faces we've not even seen yet, God. And I pray that you would just give us obedience. Let us swallow our pride and just finally say, okay, God, I'm in. God, just break our spirits and rebuild us the way you want us. We love you so much. It is such a privilege to see your kingdom grow and to exist in that kingdom. Your grace is amazing, and be with us as we leave here today. Don't let these words fall by the wayside. Don't let us get back in our routines. Help us restore our areas of restoration. Help us to restore ourselves, restore our communities, and restore this world that you've put in our hands. We love you and we praise you in everything we do and say. Amen. Mm-hmm.